Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
And welcome to another edition, a post-game victory edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. The Stars stretched their winning streak to 7 with a 5-1 victory against the Nashville Predators. And if you weren't watching the game and you see the score and you said, of course, Dallas dominated Nashville, boy, do we have a podcast story to tell you. And tonight I'm really excited because we are joined by the greatness of StarsThoughts.com's own Robert Tiffin, who's on the shelf but was nice enough to join us. How are you feeling, sir?
Good, Gavin. Just trying to find a way to help the team any way I can, right? That's what guys say when they're on the bench. So,
all right, quick recap, because I know a lot of our Stars fans care about you. You were in Seattle. You were making your way home. You fell downstairs, and you banged up your foot really, really bad.
It's exactly as stupid as it sounds. That's exactly right.
No, it wasn't stupid. You tripped and you fell, and it happens to all of us. There just happened to be a bone that was showing. Not to get graphic on this late night podcast, but man, we're all wishing you well. At least it wasn't, you didn't hit your head, you didn't hit your body, but the outpouring of support and people asking if that opens up LTIR money in the comment section was a beautiful thing.
The best line I've heard so far is, oh man, it's too bad you hit your foot instead of your head, because you probably use your foot more than your head. So that's the most accurate line so far.
Well, even then, even with an injured foot, he comes off the DL to join us tonight, and we truly appreciate it. One of the reasons I love having Robert on is because you guys ask so many questions, because he's a fountain of knowledge. And anytime your Twitter says, when you put out, hey, Robert Tiffin's on, and without even opening yet, it says 20 plus, Robert, I'll try to get you out of here in a good amount of time, but man, people want to talk to you, sir. So,
it was a very interesting game to talk about. So we're in good shape, I think.
Yeah. Six Flags roller coaster ride. All right, let's start with this. Jamie Benn out for maintenance for the first time since January of 2021. It was the fifth longest playing streak in the NHL. I really like this move, Robert. I know that players take a lot of pride in staying in the lineup, but felt as though this was good, necessary. I think Pete DeBoer showed that he's doing this the other night by playing the extra defenseman and resting Harley and Lindell a little bit, keeping minutes down when he can.
Yeah, I think this is the sort of game, regardless of how it started, you look at everything on paper, both how the minutes got balanced and how the scoring was distributed. And those are all the things that make you feel good about this team in the playoffs. And if that means that you can rest players, I put the quote in my story tonight, but DeBoer had a couple of quotes about resting Ben and then resting players in general, and just saying, we look, every game's important. We're trying to win every game. We're trying to catch Winnipeg. That top seed is something that we're fighting for. But also, if we're in a situation where, you know, playing a guy more is going to risk him getting hurt worse, then we're not going to do it right now, which, you know, he's trying to say all the right things. And, you know, when you win a game 5-1 that you should win against a team and their backup goaltender, you can't really argue with the result.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's good to rest Jamie. I want an energized, fired up Jamie Benn coming into this lineup.
Yeah.
And I just love the way DeBoer has managed goaltending, managed minutes. I think he's done an excellent job. You know, he's coming close to, this would be his longest tenure job in the NHL, and for good reason. So I think that's important to point out. I wanted to take a different tack because I think a lot of people, Robert, would say like, well, it's about time you woke up. But sometimes we don't give credit to a team that fights through a bad night. And I really felt as though the stars changed. And I often say the stars are one-sided in that. And that's one of the things that worries me, is that if their game's not working, the ability not to change. But I thought about the 5-minute mark left in the second period. Yeah. They really started to apply pressure, and pressure in deep. And that was a lot of the shots were coming from the outside, the limited shots they had. I thought Nashville was doing a really good job boxing in. And it led to that Granlund beautiful tip from a Matt Duchene pass. Beautiful pass from Duchene. We can get into that as well, the passing of Duchene and Rantanen. But I felt from that point on, the momentum was gained. But it was that effort to get into that quote-unquote dirty area that I think really flipped this game.
Yeah, and a big part of it, I think, was getting into the Nashville zone, too. I think DeBoer said after the game that some of the puck plays were just kind of irresponsible, and I don't think he said overly fancy, but it was that type of thing where they were turning over pucks they didn't need to, giving up rushes that they didn't need to. Ottinger had to stop, a breakaway and a two-on-one in the first, and a couple of other good scoring chances, too. Just needless stuff, right? And again, you can be frustrated about that, and you can say, as every fan does, well, you can't play like that in the playoffs. You'll get killed by Colorado or Winnipeg if you do that. Sure, of course, that is true. But also, you have to point to the fact that even when they do that, they're still getting away with it because of all the skill they have in the roster. And that started tonight with Jake Ottinger, because that first period, look, you don't want to, I mean, you know, like DeBoer said, after the last game, there have been some periods in the season where different parts of the lineup have picked up other parts, right? Ottinger had a stretch where he didn't have his best game, and DeSmith had a little stretch back in the fall where he wasn't looking like, you know, the Vezina caliber goalie he's looked like lately. And that's kind of how 82 game seasons go. And if you live and die too much with every game, as, you know, most fans tend to do, fan is short for fanatic, then it's hard to keep that in focus. But I think that's kind of the right tack to take, at least publicly, if you're Pete DeBoer right now, is just to say, look, yes, we want to have a 60 minute effort from every player every night. But, you know, it's pretty cool when your goalie plays really well one period and then your top line takes over the game. Your second line scores two pretty goals. One pretty goal that Duchene had, two primary passes, great primary assists, by the way. The Marchment goal, probably not the prettiest goal, just like the goal Ottinger gave, but probably not the prettiest goal. But so much good in the lineup. It's hard for me to get too worked up. Look, I'll just try to land this convoluted plan I'm saying with this. That first period felt a lot like a bad team throwing everything they had against a good team that was in a little bit of a trap game. And after 60 minutes, the better team had the score that they should have. And, you know, if you have to choose whether to play your best in the first period or the third period, you should probably choose the third period every time. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, baseball is a good example where if you have a young pitcher, that's why you don't allow the lineup to see him for the third time.
Right.
Through.
Right.
That's why you pull them.
Yep.
And
I love that analogy. I love that's very casual, but I think that analogy is very, very
thanks, casual. Man. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
And I think what's fascinating is that we need to give credit to Nashville. I mean, this is a team that's long been out, Steven Stamkos, I mean, played really well tonight. A lot of their players played really well. A lot of the young guys that they've called up from Milwaukee played really well. So, I mean, I give them credit. And for two periods, overall, they were the better team, but the Stars turned it on when they needed to. And yeah, getting back to Duchesne, I love watching Matt Duchesne replays because I can see his head movement.
Yeah. Robert. Yeah. You see that shoulder check on the first goal that you're talking about with Grant.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And the, I see, like, you could see on that first goal, he noticed Granlin. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it's like, all right, maybe he's just putting pucks on net. But he saw Granlin coming. Yep. And then the second goal, it's one thing to get your puck, you know, he got picked.
Yeah.
Right by the blue line, but the effort to not give up and grab that back, but also have the knowledge that Mason Marchman is behind him. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are passes that are right on the stick tape. So I tweeted out, I absolutely love watching him and Rantanen pass.
Yeah.
It is a thing of beauty. And Mikko Rantanen tonight, the two-way play, just like the other night, Robert, where it was an odd man rush and Mikko Rantanen raced back into the play and caused a shot that, you know, would have been a much better quality selection had he not run back in or skated back into the play. And tonight, causing the back check, which caused the turnover, and racing back and being the primary assist. I mean, that's just, you know, I'm really excited about. And I don't want to say I didn't know about Rantanen's two-way play, but similar to Duchesne, when we saw him first come to Dallas, his work along the boards and those tree trunks, sometimes you don't, when you don't see the player all the time, you don't know various aspects of their game.
Yeah. And this game is a really great reminder that Rantanen was never going to look 100% like the Rantanen in Colorado. Not in a worse sort of way, but just because the role he's going to play on this team, that any player is going to play on this team, is going to be different than the weird sort of, you know, load up the guys with 23, 24 minutes on the top line roles that Colorado has available for their top guys. They find a way to make it work. Kudos to them. But Dallas is such a deep team that Mikko Rantanen, with an outstanding two-way play to create an amazing rush right after they also had a rush right before that, I think, where Esa Lindell came down and had a shot before they went back the other way. Then the first line came back down and did score on their rush. And then, of course, Rantanen's feed to Bischel later. I mean, in a weird way, you know, Rantanen probably isn't the first player you think of in this game, right? Those Duchesne assists or even that Granlin tip was incredible. The Bischel, you know, Bischel was getting into it all night, the Wyatt Johnson breakaway goal. But Rantanen had 2 points, you know, he was tied for the lead in the team in points, had a really important play. And that top line just turned it on in the third period and looked incredible. And he didn't have to play 24 minutes to do it. And, you know, you do that over the course of the season, that's 2 points a game. Well, I don't have to do the math for you. That's pretty good point pace. And that it's okay if he's not looking like the best winger in hockey every single night, the way he could in Colorado, because he doesn't need to. Dallas is just too deep and too good for any one player to have to be that player every night. All you need to do is make the most of the moments that you get. And Rantanen absolutely did that tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And credit to Maverick Bork springing Wyatt Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow. I mean, Johnston, boy, those wrists move quick and those hand speed as far as, wow.
He just froze Enonen. Like, he just absolutely broke him. He just ended sprawled kind of in the splits. And Johnston had basically, he could have walked the puck into the net. I really think he could have. He just chose to, you know, okay, now that I've circumvented him, I'll go ahead and deposit it. But it was that level of elite shooter versus backup goalie is exactly what it looked like. And that
also really, deceptive speed. You know, yes. I mean, yes. It's amazing that he's getting these breakaway opportunities.
Sean Shapiro actually had a piece on Johnston, I think just this morning, that he published, and he talked about his edges and some of the things that he can do on the edges of his skates and the ways that he cuts and everything. And that was a good example of how he maintains his balance and does those sorts of things, not necessarily because he's doing it at, you know, a million miles an hour, but he's doing it faster than you think. And then he's able to keep coming in and keep that speed up. it reminds me, I think Sean had the comparison to Patrice Bergeron, but someone earlier this season told me that sometimes Sidney Crosby is a player that reminds him a little bit of Johnson too. And of course, you can't compare anyone to Crosby. Johnson is not Crosby. He won't be. No one will be. That's ridiculous. But that level of just perfect skill at the perfect time, like he did exactly what he needed to there. It's just an embarrassment of riches for Dallas right now.
Yeah, so 6-game goal streak, that's longest in the NHL. And for those that are keeping track, like we keep track of everything at Spits and Suds, with that goal tonight, Wyatt Johnston is just 805 goals away from Alex Ovechkin.
On his heels. Check your rearview mirror.
Like get Gretzky to fly into Dallas. Just in case.
Hey, back to Maverick Bourque. You mentioned Maverick Bourque and that assist to Johnston, which was,
it was
fantastic.
Beauty.
And it's one thing if you know the hit's coming, and I think Bourque senses a hit is coming. I'm not sure if he sees completely. I have to go back and watch maybe a different angle of the play. But regardless of whether Bourque sees that hit coming from the other shoulder or not, I think it was on his very next shift that I saw Bourque laying a pretty big hit. Too. Mm-hmm. Like it was something where that the whole team, the way they got energized after, as that third period got rolling, it just seemed like this is the version of Dallas that every other team is terrified to face in the playoffs when they look like that. And you'd rather it not take, 40, 45 minutes for that version to show up. But, they've been there a couple of times already in the last 2 years. So if you don't think that they can summon that in a playoff series, you're probably betting wrongly.
I mean, those are the things that excite me. The fact that Maverick Bourque could get hot, the little things that Dadonov could get hot, that maybe Jamie Benn turns it on. Not that the captain's been bad, but it's one of those things that, when the captain gets hot, if any player gets hot, it's a beautiful thing.
One last thing about Jamie, actually, we should point out, here's what we don't know. We don't know exactly what that conversation was like with Jamie, because I'd always kind of assumed that him getting scratched, like the last time he missed a regular season game, of course, he was suspended in the playoffs a couple of years ago for those cross checks on Mark Stone's head or neck. But the last time he missed a game was in 2021. I think it was the first game of that weird, season after the bubble, where they were all in different divisions and everything. And Victor Arvidsson collided with Ben and hit his knee, and Ben had to be helped off the ice. I mean, it was bad. And then Ben missed, I think, 4 games before he came back that season. We just saw Ben play a complete game in Seattle, and we had no really indications that he was hurting. Of course, most players are probably dealing with something at some point this year, but we're almost to the end of the year. Ben was on pace to play every game in the season. So I just don't know. This is me saying it's very surprising to me that Ben was scratched tonight, even if it is for maintenance. There are, to say maintenance as opposed to injury is a very interesting choice from PGA.
Yeah.
Because that very much suggests that Ben is 100% okay with this. And this is the same thing we're doing with Sam Steele. And it's not different with Ben than it is from any other player. And maybe that's exactly what Ben wants. He doesn't want to be treated differently or whatever. Give him credit if that's the case. It just is very, I think it's something that's easy to get lost in all the good stuff that's happening. Is this is a really odd choice to have the fifth longest Ironman streak in the NHL right now. Just, we'll just get you some rest, even though you just played a full hockey. I mean, look at Alex, Alex Pietrangelo or whoever, who didn't go to the Four Nations because they were dealing with an ailment, but they still kept playing every game for their team. Ben is obviously dealing with something, if we believe reports about this lower body injury, but he did miss a game. So it just seems counterintuitive to the type of player he's been in his career for him to miss this game. So we don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see when he comes back into the lineup and how he looks. But I just thought that's something that's worth kind of pausing on for a minute, because it really is odd for this franchise, for Jamie Benn, not to be playing a game when he basically can get on 2 feet in any possible way.
Well, and I think the term scratched would bring up a lot more conversation too. True. And I think that's why maintenance is used.
Yep. Yeah. Wasn't coach's decision or anything like that, which DeBoer was used before too. So
I think it's out of respect for him. And like I said, I like the move. If Jamie's okay with it, I'm okay with it.
If he needs it, if he's nursing something, then it's absolutely the right call. We just don't know what that might be.
Yeah. By the way, Stars with that victory, now 28 games at home they've won this year. The team record is 29, and that was the Stanley Cup season.
It sure was. And so, and that year, I think they also had four ties that season too, which they didn't have shootouts, obviously, in 1999. So maybe they probably convert a couple of those, right, if you port that over to modern day. So maybe the Stars will pass it, but I won't really be comfortable saying that without an asterisk unless the Stars pass it by a couple of wins. So that's my challenge to this team is you need to pass it by more than just one. You need to pass it by two or three.
And I think Stars fans also have to realize, and I'm not trying to make excuses, but five games in the next 7 days, that's a lot of wear and tear. And unfortunately, that fifth game is against Winnipeg. So hopefully they can get the rest that's needed. They will have a day off prior to that. But listen, we saw what Nashville did tonight. And Pittsburgh has some talented players. Every NHL team has talented players. Minnesota has talented players. So, you know, you should beat these teams. However, don't be surprised if you lose every once in a while as well, because like I said, these teams, they're professional and they get paid as well.
It's how it goes. I mean, Winnipeg is up right now. I think as we record this, Winnipeg is up on Vegas, and Colin Miller has a power play goal. That's not something that you really expect. Stars fans remember Colin Miller from a couple of years
sure
ago.
Do.
Very likable player and everything like that. But
yeah,
you know, for a team near the, you know, second best record in the league or whatever, you don't necessarily expect him to be leading your power play. So sometimes it's not necessarily the ideal way that you get it done. And sometimes you drop games that you should win. Certainly the Stars were doing that earlier in the year. But you know, it's a long season, and with just a few games left, what, seven games left to go, I guess, for Dallas, they, you know, they're third in the NHL. It's easy to look over that when things don't happen the ideal way. But, you know, they had an ideal end of the season last year, and they ended up coming up short in the third round. So who knows? Maybe they need to go in with a little bit more of a sputter at times and then really get going in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's get some questions in while we continue this conversation. A big Stars win tonight. Jacob chimes in, and this is the passion of Stars fans. Granlund is probably the only Star who actually gives a crap out there. You can kind of tell who actually wants it. So, Jacob, love you. Thank you for listening. But I politely disagree. I think there were a lot of players that gave a crap out there tonight. I think your top stars gave a crap. They just could not get the wheels going, and it was frustrating. Absolutely agree with you, Jacob. It was frustrating. I will say this, you know, Granlund is one of those guys. When you need a big goal, Granlund will provide it. I mean, he has been everything and more that you want in a player. When you look at the trades Jim Nill has made, once again, you look at Tanev, and the impact that he has. You look at the year before with Dadonov and Domi, with the deal that Jim Nill made. And then you look at this year with Cody Ceci and Granlund and the impact that they've had and the impact that Mikko Rantanen has had. Robert, I just can't say enough about Jim Nill and just his trade deadline wheeling and dealing as far as grabbing players that just really seem as though they get better and they are a perfect fit for this team.
I mean, how good does Granlund look right now? Right. I know it took him a little while to get really going in terms of goals and things like that. But again, that's the nature of this team. You can have another team's first line center like Granlund come over and not really score a bunch of goals for you early. And it's fine because everyone else in the team can score, it seems, on any given night. And Granlund is the sort of player who, I mean, they said it at the time, and I think DeBoer said it in a conference a week or two ago when we were talking to him about something, and he pointed out that Granlund was the 5-on-3 penalty killer for San Jose. So when they were down two guys, Granlund was the player they would put up top there as their one forward on the penalty kill for 5-on-3. And that's usually a role that you see like a Sam Steele or Roddick Foxa back in the day, or Colin Blackwell or someone doing that. So Granlund is that sort of player who can do that and be that defensively responsible, hardworking, give a crap player, I guess, put it in the tweeter's words. I will also say this. I had a good conversation with Matt Duchene in Seattle after morning skate, just kind of talking about what everyone was talking about, getting outshot and, you know, is the team not bringing the same effort as these other teams? And he look, he's never going to say, well, you know, we're just kind of mailing it in, waiting for the playoffs. Of course they're not. But he did say some real things that are good to keep in mind. Teams that are fighting for the playoffs, like Calgary, for instance, I think was the last game they played in. Like Calgary, they are just in a different headspace necessarily than the Stars are. To them, it's like game seven, whereas the Stars, it's not game seven. And you can tell them, come on, boys, you got to get going every night, and DeBoer can yell and stomp all he wants, but they're not dumb. They know they're placed in the standings. They see it every day. It's right outside the locker room in Dallas. They see the standings every day. And they know how good they are. And the last thing you probably want is a team that has been this good all year, suddenly feeling, trying to like muster artificial desperation. It's not desperation right now. You see it sometimes later in games. If they're losing, you can see them kind of summon that extra gear. Sometimes late in a period, you can see that too. The last time I checked this, way more goals get scored at the start and ends of periods than they do in like the intervening time. It's kind of just a wave that goes up at the end and the start of every period. And Duchesne was just saying when we were talking, like, look, we're obviously we want to do better and we're working on it. We're talking about specific things and strategies and everything. But at the end of the day, there's going to be those games where other teams come out like Calgary and they're flinging pucks all over from all over the place. And they're retrieving pucks better because they're more desperate. And that's good. But also what we've seen is other teams haven't been able to do that for 60 minutes often and beat the Stars. And tonight was a great example of that, where Nashville came out hot. But I think the give a crap was actually pretty high throughout the lineup. It's just that they were out of sync and some players might have been trying too much and too hard early. And that's why you had the giveaways and turnovers early. So
it's a June conversation, and hopefully we're talking Stanley Cup for the Stars, but we can also talk about Mikhail Granlund and re-signing with this team. And Duchesne's my number one priority. And I think they can get Duchesne done based on Nashville's salary cap that they have to pay Duchesne, which is over $6 million next year. But I really would like to see him for a couple of years in a Stars uniform. I just don't know if they can afford him, but just the depth he provides and just, you know, he's one of those guys that, like I said, he'll come up big, but he's not going to make any mistakes. You know, I mean, his point production has been tremendous. He just does everything. And it's just, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, he showed me as well with the Four Nations, with all those players, to have the A on his sweater. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. And I think Rantanen, I think it was after the second Seattle game the other night, Rantanen kind of organized, I think the team tweeted it out or put it on Instagram or whatever, one of the social things. And Rantanen organized a picture of like a bunch of the Finns together, including Granlund. Nice. And it was one of those, you know, it just reminds you like, man, if you're Granlund and you played that season in San Jose,
yes,
the trade to, what was it, Pittsburgh a year or two ago, where he just couldn't score after he got traded there and everything. And now you're in Dallas on this team rolling this well, and a bunch of other, you know, great Finns. You just got back from Four Nations where they beat Sweden in that game and kind of played, you know, a little bit over their heads despite missing some great players. You have to be feeling about as good as you've ever felt in recent times. Just in the real question will be for cap space. I think with Duchesne, the last time I looked at it, his cap hit is six, but I think the actual cash he gets from Nashville is less. I think it's closer to like three that he gets from Nashville. So again, as if $3 million isn't a lot of money, but $3 million and $3 million like this year, right? That's still $6 million. That's a great ticket. And obviously he's...
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Made a lot of money in his career too, so that, like you said, that's a June conversation. How I don't see how you fit Duchesne and Granlund without making other moves, but who knows?
Right.
Jim, none of us saw Jim Neal getting Mikko Rantanen, so far be it from me to say that it's not possible to bring both of them back this summer.
Yeah, I just think the impact of Matt Duchesne is just and the thing that makes me want to sign Duchesne first. Not that I would love to have Jamie Benn here, but I want Jamie Benn on a fair deal. But my thing is like, it's not just Matt Duchesne, the player, it's Mason Marchment. It's whoever else is. I mean, every player that plays with Matt Duchesne plays better.
Mm-hmm. I have to give Duchesne a ton of credit too, because I think DeBoer said this the other day also. I keep quoting the coach. It's going to sound like I'm a...
it's good.
But he pointed out that last year, Duchesne fell off in the second half and also the playoffs, aside from that great overtime goal in Colorado, obviously. And Duchesne even said it last summer at exit interviews. He was really candid. He said, I was like kind of rattled and emotionally, it just kind of took a tear. And I finally like ran out of gas emotionally and everything. And I have to be better next year. And then he came back for the same price. And he has been way better. He's been, DeBoer said the other day, he was the team's MVP in the first half of the season, probably. He was that good. And he has kept that production up. He's still right. He's either the team's top scorer or right up there with Robertson, Henson, Johnson, all kind of in that group. I guess Rantanen, if you count him, bringing points over to Colorado. And I completely understand why you or anyone would say we got to find a way to bring Duchesne back, because this is a very different season if the Stars hadn't been able to bring Duchesne back. There would have been a really rough stretch in the fall and even winter where there wasn't enough scoring from the other top guys.
You were probably there for the exit interviews, but I remember doing a Spits and Suds episode after watching the exit interview in which he kept saying, we need to do this. We need to be better at this. It was not it was not like, well, who knows? You know, I mean, hey, I really enjoyed playing on this team. It's like he made it pretty clear that he was coming back. I mean, even the other day he's talking about his accountability from last year. In a post interview and said, I need to be better. I thought I was good two way. I thought I blocked some shots, but I need to score more this year in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, the maturity of Matt Duchesne and what he's bringing to the table is just, I'm just so, it's like Pavelski part two in many ways. And that's once again, has to go back to Stars management and the research and really, fighting, because there were teams that I know Boston was interested. There were a few teams interested in Matt Duchesne to get him, to get him to come back. It's been really impressive. All right, Robert.
Okay. Last thing on Duchesne. I think I can do this in 11 seconds, two of which I've used up explaining how quickly I'm going to say it. Tonight, Jamie Benn's not in the lineup. The three A's, I believe the three alternate captains, they went with Duchesne, Lindell, and Hintz, I believe. I think Mike Hika tweeted this out, but I believe I saw these on the broadcast. Duchesne's leadership in a game like this, getting through that first half where they weren't as good, I don't think that's insignificant. I think having a player like Duchesne wearing a letter in a game like this matters.
Great point. That is absolutely a great point. All right. Narrator RN, which is at PopsXV, the Twitter handle. Which play was better, Duchesne's second effort that led to the Marchment goal or Rantanen back check leading to the Hintz goal?
I have to give it to Rantanen just because Duchesne was cleaning up a mess that he kind of made with the turnover in the offensive, almost turnover. I guess he got it back, so it's not technically a turnover. I'm not sure how the scorekeeper recorded it. I think the Rantanen play, you have to say, because that was just the quote unquote 200 foot effort or whatever back and forth. It's just, that's just gorgeous, right? That's a coach's dream. Every coach loves to say, yeah, the finish was good, but right, the Wyatt Johnson goal was good, but what about Bork's pass right before he got leveled? The Hintz goal was great, but what about Rantanen's work to get to Stamkos just in time to prevent that dangerous shot that could have been a killer goal at that point, right?
I have,
for me, Rantanen goal. What about you?
Wow. I mean, both were terrific because I love the effort, but I would have to say the Rantanen, because I'm just continue to be impressed. I mean, Duchesne, I said at one point, like, I stopped talking about Matt Duchesne because I felt like I was talking about him too much on this show, but you know, I've just become such a Duchesne fan. And the Rantanen just, I'm watching an elite player, and that's what I absolutely love. And to go both ways as far as sprinting down the ice and getting that back check and immediately turning and then being one of the primary passers on the goal just to me showed his ability. And so I would have to say the Mikko Rantanen. I can't believe, like, Robert, this guy is going to have a whole offseason to get accustomed to Dallas, to move in a place that he wants to do, to feel more comfortable, to get settled, to have a whole training camp.
It's pretty ridiculous when you... The only comparison I can really think of in Stars history, at least off the top of my head, Well, maybe Jason Spezza a little bit, although okay. I think even at the time, Spezza was a little bit older. I think Spezza was north of 30 when he signed that four-year extension right after they traded for him, also from Nashville, I guess. Or wait, no, Nashville tried to get him, I think, from Ottawa or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was Ottawa.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and Nashville was trying to get him or whatever, and he went with Dallas in the end. Or he used a no trade to avoid going to Nashville. That's what it right. was. Gosh, okay, this yes. is 10 years ago now. More than so the comparison I was actually thinking of was Brad Richards, who when oh. they got that in 2008, got him at the deadline, big trade, sent Mike Smith and UC Jokinen and Jeff Halperin, I believe, to get him.
Oh, that's great recall by you. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I believe so. Jeff Halperin, you know, always cheating on faceoffs. Gotta love him. Then turned into a coach, I believe. He's coaching somewhere last
night. He's the assistant coach with Tampa, yes.
Yep. Yep. Great player. And UC Jokinen. I mean, that was hard to see, right? Everyone loved the juice back in the day.
Yes.
But
yes.
Richards coming over was that sort of player. He with Le Cavalier and Martin Saint-Louis in Tampa Bay, they had just won a cup. There's a lot of similarities between those three and Colorado's big three that had also just won a cup. And Richards wasn't necessarily seen as like the best of those, maybe even the third best of those three. But in retrospect, he ended up being the best for the following few years, I would argue. I mean, Saint-Louis is pretty good, but Le Cavalier fell off a cliff pretty quickly. And the Stars even tried to get Le Cavalier, fun fact, a few years later, I think under Jim Neal, before they did the Tyler Seguin trade, they looked into getting Le Cavalier. And I'm just throwing stuff out here from memory, but I feel pretty confident about all of those things. But getting Brad Richards turned out for the next couple of years, he only got better. He had that great debut, everyone remembers, in that first game in 08 after he got traded for, where he had 5 assists. But for the next couple of years, I think he hit, 90 points 1 year or something yeah. for Dallas? I mean, he was yeah. incredible on a bad team. And that's after he got comfortable. And that was with a bad team. So imagine what Rantanen can do after he continues to grow more. I mean, you already saw what he can do tonight. That assist to Bischel was outstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, and how many times have we seen him make a pass like that? He's just a really, really, really good player. And he's got all the gifts that go along with it.
Boy, Robert, that beat my Major League Baseball example, because that Brad Richards pull is a terrific example, man. Congratulations. Stick tap to you on that one.
Now, center versus winger. That's the main difference yeah. I think anyone would pull. Richards was a center, but still, you know, these days the position matters probably less than it did, you know, 15, 16 years ago. So
sure, absolutely. And yeah. Mike Smith, I mean, that was a tough trade. Like yeah. you gave up some really, really good assets, but you did get a Hall of Fame player. So
yep.
Yeah, really interesting. Christopher DeHardy says, I wish they started better, but how you finish matters just as much. That and the power play are my only complaints. That Wyatt goal was amazing. Happy for Bish to get one too. 2 points tonight, 2 points behind Winnipeg. I believe the Stars can catch the Jets. Let's do it. All right. Thank you, Christopher, for your comments. So before you popped on, Robert, I wanted to know, because I think a lot of people are automatically thinking, well, if the Stars beat Winnipeg on Thursday night, they're going to go on to win the division. So I looked up playoff tie-breaking procedure, and man, if the NHL can make it confusing, I'm not sure how. If two or more clubs are tied in points during the regular season, the standing of the clubs is determined in the following order. If they just did head-to-head, I'd be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the fewer number of games played, i.e. superior points percentage. Number two, the greater number of games won, excluding games won in overtime or by shootout, i.e. regulation wins. This figure is reflected in the RW column. Three, the great number of games won, excluding games won by shootout. The figure is reflected in the ROW column. I mean, I already have a headache.
Yeah. Hey, you remember how Gary Bettman's a lawyer, and so is Pete DeBoer, and so is John Cooper.
Yeah.
All these guys. It reads like legalese, doesn't it? All fans really need to know is the first tiebreaker is regulation wins.
Yep.
So there Dallas has control of their own destiny. Even if Winnipeg win tonight, I think they were up 3-0 last I checked. Even if Winnipeg hang on win, Dallas still have control of their own destiny in terms of winning the Central Division and most likely the Western Conference too.
Right.
Which would be huge for them, because it would mean not facing Colorado in the first round, which would be huge. It's still unlikely. They would have to do two things. One, win their game in hand that they have on Winnipeg, and then they would have to beat Winnipeg in their head-to-head coming up next week. Those are two in regulation, I should say. Mm-hmm. So those are two pretty tall orders, but that game is in Dallas, and they did beat Winnipeg at home earlier this year, even though they've gotten kind of stomped by them in Winnipeg both times this year. So right. It's possible, and you know, this is a lot closer than Dallas ever looked like they'd be, what, a couple of weeks ago when they were like eight or 10 points behind Winnipeg. So
yeah,
you know, it's fun to play meaningful games.
And stick tap to David Kokas, who I've been talking back and forth with on Twitter. He's a Spits and Suds listener. Robert, he was at the game that you came down and visited. He's a subscriber to starsthoughts.com.
Right on.
He's excited to meet you. But we've been going back and forth on the playoff format because he, you know, doesn't like it. And I know a lot of fans don't. The only retort I'll say is because I would like them to go back to the 1-8.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take a step back and take the Stars cap off, which I know is tough because I try to do it myself, it really has proven kind of this year that this format does reward those in first place.
That is true.
And that's the only thing that I think, unless the teams complain at the meetings, this is not going to change. But if, say, it's the Stars or Winnipeg, they're going to play likely Minnesota or St. Louis, but likely Minnesota at this point. And then you look at Vegas, we'll have the other. And, you know, rather than taking on Colorado. So there is incentive why you should finish first. And I think that's what you want going into the playoffs. So I can understand, and I am with you. I want to go back to 1-8 because the Stars deserve a better draw if they finish second in the division. However, from a league standpoint, I can understand that they're pretty happy with the way it is this year.
Yeah, the only two things I would say to David would be, one, the players feel the same way. they want the regular season success. They want finishing second in your division to be rewarded by something more than you get to play Colorado. but the second thing I would say is, if you remember back to the last time it was kind of close to this, you had three divisions in each conference, and just the top seed in each conference would get first, second, and third place. Then the other five seeds were just whoever finished, right? Those were all, I think, wild card seeds that just got seeded. So
yeah,
you had three divisions in the West and three divisions in the East. The winner of those three divisions got the 1-2-3 spot. And then the other teams that were second or lower in every division were just thrown into that kind of fourth through eighth position. So it was closer to the kind of system that we're saying would be more fair. But that system also had its issues. I think the Southeast Division was usually the one with like Atlanta and some of the teams down there that weren't very good. And there was at least one or two years where the team that won that division and got the three seed would have been like the seventh or eighth seed if it had been actually by points total. There was one year it was almost like they would have been out of the playoffs, as I recall, very vaguely. So every system does have some flaws. If there's any other consolation, all the rumblings that have kind of been out there that mainly Gary Bettman is the main advocate for the system staying the way it is now. And the rumblings are also that he's not going to be remaining as the commissioner forever. So maybe that is right. Something that might be different 5 years from now. But for now, you know, if the Stars win the rest of their games, if they put together another 7-game winning streak like they just did, then, you know, they won't have anything to complain about.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a CPA, Robert, that listens, and her name is Aaliyah. I've met Aaliyah. She's awesome. And I'm going to combine her tweet with Chris Stabkoven. She says, any ideas how we can get them to focus in the first period, or is it completely broken? So don't fix it, or it's not completely broken. And Chris Stabkoven says, what do we make of the slow start? Or we just weather the opposition best punch, then swing back, like daring the team to give us their best shot. But then we respond. Not sure if that's sustainable, but they're winning, so nothing to complain about. So both tweets kind of have the same opinion. And I think we all, I don't want to use the term frustration, but we'd all like to see them get out of the gates quicker.
Yeah, I think it's hard for me to be as concerned in games like this where the opponent, or even like Calgary or something, where it's clear that the opponent isn't as good, because, again, there's a different mentality coming to the game for those teams. It's not excusable if you're the coach. You can't accept that, right? You need to say you have to be better. We can't just ask our goalie to bail us out for the first period or longer every single game. You can't do that. It's not a good way to play, and you will get burned by that before long. But the times I would be concerned about it are like we've seen against, you know, Winnipeg or Edmonton or Tampa, right? When Pete DeBoer went off a little bit again after that game and just said, look, you just can't do this. And then I can't remember what the game was after that where he said something effectively like, there haven't been many disappointing losses in my career, but this would be one of them.
Yes.
Those are pretty harsh words from, right. Or many disappointing wins in my career, but this would be one of them. And that's about as harsh as DeBoer has gotten this year with the team. So he's not resting and saying it's okay. All you can really do at this point is say, well, they're, you know, finding a way to win games against these other teams. That's fine. But when they get stomped by the good teams, that's where it's concerning, because it's one thing if a desperate team like, you know, Anaheim or whatever comes out and makes you look bad because they're just playing for their lives. But it's a whole nother thing if Winnipeg or Edmonton, teams that have the exact same reasons as you do to want to win that game, and you can't even come close to matching them for most of the game, those are the ones that should be concerning. And then they have been. So the good news is we'll have another chance to see what they bring against Winnipeg next week. But I think I understand why people would be upset or worried about what they're going to look like in the playoffs, because you absolutely cannot do that in the playoffs and get away with it long in a 7-game series, you know, giving away the first period all the time. But, you know, they're 8-0-2 in their last 10 games.
Right, exactly.
So it's sort of one of those, yeah, it's not acceptable, but also I'm not going to, like, tell my players that they all stink because we're winning so many games and scoring so many goals and the goalies are playing well. Like, at the end of the day, I don't know. What do you do? It's got to be frustrating as a coach, right? What do you do? You can't necessarily turn the screws, but you also have to make sure that everyone understands you need more too. It's an interesting quandary that is made a lot easier by the fact that they're winning.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Winning cures everything. A couple of comments. Evan White eased into the game a bit, but the skill and talent took over and turned it into a feel-good win. Go Stars. Thanks for listening, Evan. Y Joe number 53 is elite. Craig, thank you so much for listening. Another 2-point night for Moose and Grandolph. Nets another 2. Great night for trade deadline boys tonight. Okay, let's see if Robert understands this tweet. Uh-oh. The Ubi says, ask Robert about orthopedic inserts.
No. Just reasoning from the words that you said, are I think they would be either like the things you put in shoes
to
correct your arches or your gait or something. So it sounds like he's implying that I don't walk so good.
I need
help walking better because I fell. Okay. I'm open to everything at this point, but the good news is I'm not walking right now. So that would
I'm not sure the inserts would have helped at that point.
No, it was really more about the brain power and the coordination than it was about the physical act of walking.
So you were trying to do 2 stairs at a time, is that?
Yeah, they're just stairs. What's the big deal?
You were going down, not up, right?
No, it's going. So I had just come down a bigger flight of stairs
from
the train, and then I was going up a smaller set of stairs up to a parking lot, and just approached it with a little bit too much confidence and speed, and I've recounted this story a lot of times in the last couple of days, but it's very stupid, so I deserve it. But I'll try not to bore people with it anymore from this point.
No, that's okay. But we need to support Robert with starsthoughts.com to pay his bills, to make sure he's okay.
Give him a brain transplant. Yeah.
I will use every opportunity to promote starsthoughts.com. And thank you for being bold and telling that story. That was a really, really good read. As far as you getting injured, I hate to say it under those circumstances, but it was a good read, Robert.
I'll just, to be really frank, because I try to always be really honest on this podcast, because you've built something really special here, and I think it deserves all the candor that I can bring to it. I think I owe it to people to know why I'm not there and why I'm not getting better, you know, quotes or conversations or information for at least the next few days. And so I just wanted to be kind of upfront and not try to be mysterious or something like that. Just be like, look, this is kind of embarrassing, but here's what's going on. Not going to be a big deal. Not trying to milk this or anything, but just, again, not that there's anything to milk. It's just me being an idiot. But I really, really appreciate everyone who subscribed or everyone who reads or shares or whatever. And I think I owe it to all those folks to just be really upfront with them about what the situation is right now. And hopefully it'll change, you know, before too long goes by. Hopefully in a week or so, we'll be back up and at them, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you get some chirping from the boys in the room.
Oh man. Can you imagine going there like on crutches or something right now and just be like, oh, your toe? Oh no. Yeah. Let me tell you about the last game I played with, you know, a broken leg and got hit in the face and did all this stuff. Got 8 stitches up the back of my neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you should take this to the next level. Like when you're ready, Robert, I want you to go. If you don't have one in your closet, I will buy you a blue non-contact sweater to wear around because you're taking it just like Tyler Seguin wore that blue sweater on the ice the other day.
Okay. I should say one thing that I do know is that the Stars, when they've used no contact, they usually go with red. So mm-hmm. I think I wasn't at the practice, so I can't say for sure, but from what I've seen, a couple of pictures I saw, I think actually what was happening is it just wasn't a contact practice at all. And Seguin was wearing the blue like fourth line. Cause usually what they do in practice, if you, they don't always wear them at like morning skate, but at practice, and most of those are public, the top line wears white jerseys. The second line wears green jerseys. The third wears gray and the fourth wears blue. That's been at least what I've seen this year. That's typically been what they've done. And then if they're doing special teams, then they'll do one team wears white and one team wears green, I think, usually.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, it's no contact. Obviously, DeBoer said Seguin isn't doing contact, but I don't think they use blue for no contact. So I just wanted to correct that because I've seen a few people tweeting that stuff. So anyway.
It's a good problem to have, but I mean, I'm thinking when Seguin does come back and hopefully he does return for the playoffs, maybe he goes on the third line with Ben and Johnston.
He looks really good. I just have to say, like he was at both morning skates in Seattle, participated fully. Pete DeBoer busted out a special drill for him after morning skate on Saturday, where it's just DeBoer and Seguin on the ice, and DeBoer ran him through this crazy skating drill. The phrase DeBoer used was, "I wanted to get a piece of him," and I've been telling Seguin I want to get a piece of him before he's all done, you know, getting tuned up and ready to come back. And so DeBoer and he was laughing about it, talking about it. And he even said that now Seguin's kind of annoyed about it because now the other coaches have been like, oh, how can we find some crazy drill to put Seguin through now that Pete did that. So, as much as he hasn't gone through contact, that is still a big step. They are not exactly treating him with kid gloves either. So Seguin is, I think if I had to guess, and it's just a guess, all the information that's out there is out there. That's what I'm going off of here. But if I had to guess, I would be very surprised if Tyler Seguin isn't ready for game one of the playoffs, if not sooner. It's really just a matter of how do you get him ready? How do you get him game action before then? And that remains to be seen. They'd have to make at least one move in the cap. I think the only real move they could make is Leon Bischel being reassigned for like the last, let's say, game or two or something, reassign him to Texas, at least on paper for the last game or two, just to get Seguin some action. But, you know, I don't know. It's a tough situation. They can't just activate them. They'd have to do something, and they can't LTIR at this point. You're under 10 games left. You can't use LTIR anymore. So we'll see what'll happen. But all I can say is from what I've seen and heard with Seguin, I feel like pretty optimistic that he'll be ready to go for game one. But again, who knows? Pete has been clear just the other day. He said they could both be ready. He and Haskinen could both be ready for game one. They could both not be ready for game one until all the boxes are checked. We don't know. And so, you know, again, there can always be a setback or something too. So we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but just if that's kind of where I'm leaning right now, just from what I've seen and heard.
Thackman says, hoping for better starts down the stretch, but great win after a slow start. Stick tap, Thackman. You're one of our dedicated Spits and Sets listeners, and we do appreciate you. Our friend Jordan H, any chance the top line gets a rest day before the playoffs start? 96 might need a moving day. I will say this. You are limited in the amount of moves that you can make, but if that last game, I'm sure they will either rest or play fourth line on some serious minutes, try to stay not injured, so to speak. But if DeBoer can find a way to rest players, he certainly will. Husky says, they say a win masks problems. While this was another huge W for Dallas, you can't mask the fact that it took them about 35-ish minutes to really get going. If they want to make a deep run, they need to start showing up in the first or else it's game over. I mean, I think Robert and I agree with you. But this happens during the regular season. Okay. Logan says, very direct, giving me order, says, talk about it on the pod. Yes, sir. Let me get right to it, Logan. What do you think of my comp for Johnston? As I see a lot of people comp him to Patrice Bergeron, but to me, he reminds me way more of prime Jonathan Toews. Silky hands, great skater, good playmaker that can score and win faceoffs while playing high IQ defense.
I don't hate that comp. I don't hate it. Okay. Yeah, I don't hate it. The problem is that Johnson is just, he's so young and doing things so unprecedented that those are the names you have to kind of invoke, Bergeron or Toews, yeah, or whatever, just to help people understand. I've been accused of some hyperbole about Johnson in the past. I wrote a piece for D Magazine, I think last year, where I just kind of referred to some of the things that he was doing at 19 or 20 years old and had a little kicker in there about, by the way, the Stars really haven't seen a player doing this at this age since someone whose statue is outside the American Airlines Center. And yeah, obviously, you know, Madonna was number one pick, came over just a phenom, an otherworldly Hall of Famer, no doubt player, has the statue, deserves it, all those sorts of things. No one should be compared to Madonna in any serious way, you know, until they put at least, you know, Jamie Benn, great player, absolutely will have his number in the rafters someday, should. But he's not Mike Madonna, right? He's not. And I don't think Ben would be the least bit insulted by that, by someone saying that. So saying anything like that about Johnson either is crazy. But just the fact that you could say, yeah, with Toews, I can kind of see it. That two-way game. I mean, Bergeron also, right? How really I'd like to hear that listener describe the differences that they see between Bergeron and Toews, because I'd want to know which parts of his game they're comparing and contrasting. Because to me, the skating reminds me a little bit more of Bergeron. A couple little things, but just go read John's article. He literally just wrote a whole piece about Wyatt Johnson. So people should just go do that.
You know, I was going to think of Ante Kopitar is pretty special in that position. But you know what's interesting about Wyatt Johnson is I don't know about comparables, and I want to give an answer, but like, just structure wise, he's different than Toews. He's different than Bergeron. Like, he's not that, I mean, Robert, you're around him all the time. He's not that big of a guy, but somehow he knows where to be. He can get in tight without like being pushed off the play. It's a fascinating watch how he always knows how to be where he rarely takes a big hit. He's fascinating to watch.
He's a special player. I mean, Pete DeBoer is a veteran coach, and no veteran coach in this league is used to taking a player right out of juniors in an NHL training camp who's 19 years old and plugging him into their starting lineup on their power play. This was going around today. I can't remember where it was, but I think it was on Twitter or something. People were pointing out Wyatt Johnson's first career NHL goal. And it came in his first game, and the primary assist on that first NHL goal, I think it was Michael Dixon mentioned this, the primary assist on that first goal. You don't remember who it was by any chance, do you? Did you see this recently?
No.
No, you'd think probably, well, Jamie Benn, right? He started in a line with him famously and all that, or, you know, maybe Joe Pavelski or something like that. No, or maybe a defenseman, right? No, it was Tyler Seguin. And that's because he was on the power play with Tyler Seguin when he scored his first goal. So in his first game, he scored his first NHL goal on the power play as a 19-year-old. Wow. And that's just, coaches don't do that, right? They just don't do that. But DeBoer saw something about Johnson right off the bat that told him, not only is this kid going to play in the NHL right out of juniors as a teenager, but I'm going to put him in these situations. And he's done that and started putting him on the penalty kill before too long in his career as well. And now he plays every situation, defending the empty net, attacking the empty net, whatever it is. He's just a special, special player. And all I would say is just watch him, because he can do dekes like he did tonight and score. He can make crazy passes. He can create space. He can defend well. He's just, I don't know. It's almost selling him short in a weird way to compare him to a player, because then you're trying to measure him up to them or look at numbers, when really you should just watch everything he does, because it's more impressive the more you watch it.
Right. And the game has changed also. I do want to point it out for anyone that, like, and Stars fans wouldn't say that, but others might say, well, he's a third line center. Mm-hmm. And I understand that might create some defensive pairing differential than if you're a first line. But at the same time, I mean, lines, while of course they matter, they don't matter. It's not like they used to be 20 years ago. Yeah. Like, your third line can be your top line. Your second line could be your top line. Traditionally, fourth line is probably not going to be. But you know, it's changed.
Let's just leave it at that. Johnson started on the third line tonight, right? Quote unquote third line. The line rushes and everything. That's the line he's playing on. Mm-hmm. He won 9 of 12 faceoffs, 75% of the dots. Pretty good. He played 18:07, which was 6 seconds behind Mikko Rantanen for the most of any forward. So calling it the third line is just really on this team, the way DeBoer rolls lines, you really need to just talk about forwards because he Johnson is. Well, Rantanen has changed that a little bit, but Johnson was for most of the year, most of last year, he was the number one forward. Regardless of what line he's playing on, he was getting the most ice time night in and night out. And that's going to continue to be the case. And frankly, when you're 21 years old, you probably should be able to play the most ice time as opposed to guys in their 30s or whatever. So give him lots of credit.
You're right. I was looking it up real quick because this is another thing when we talk about the Stars' depth and we talk about Pete DeBoer's coaching style. So Mikko Rantanen, let's see, his last couple of years with Colorado, 22:13 average ice time, 22:54, 22:30, and then he comes to the Stars. So far in 13 games, that's what the NHL is listed at, 18:32. So down 4 to 5 minutes from what he was playing in Colorado. That equals fresh legs.
And I think it might have been Mike Hajka in Seattle, actually. I think it was after morning skate. He asked him that exact question. Has this been tough adjusting to playing fewer minutes? And or has it helped and you felt fresher with all these things? And Rantanen said a couple of interesting things, but the main interesting thing that he said was that in the playoffs, I think the year that Colorado won the cup, in the playoffs, they had a deep lineup and his minutes actually went down in the playoffs. I need to go look that up and verify it. But this is the player saying, actually, I wasn't playing 23, 24 minutes in our playoff run most nights. I was playing down closer to what I'm playing here in Dallas. So he's done it before and has adjusted, quote unquote, to playing fewer minutes and being fresher just fine when they won the Stanley Cup. So that's written in his memory of it. I'm going to trust that he feels pretty comfortable being a point per game player so far in Dallas.
Sure, absolutely. Just a couple of more before we let Robert go. Dylan Moreland, I know it's an inferior opponent. It's great to see the Stars defend a lead by attacking, not by sitting back and blocking the shots. Yeah, certainly. Listen, when they turned it on and they kept it on, and including Blackwell with 5 seconds left trying to score, I loved it.
You know he wanted to bury that so badly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, I mean, he came up with Nashville, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, I'm just a big Colin Blackwell guy. I just love his hustle.
Yeah.
Fuzzy Wuzzy, boom, boom. Hello, my friend. Just this whole core, man. We're going to be competing deep into the playoffs for at least 4 years. I hope so. That would be amazing. Brewboy 23, I love seeing D-men score. Yeah, it was great seeing Big Bish score on that. So, let's see.
Quick Colin Blackwell story that I forgot when we were on him a minute ago. He actually was with Seattle, I believe, in their first season.
He was
in their debut season, and I was talking to him in Seattle about this, and because a fan had been so excited about him coming back to Seattle, and they'd made a sign, and they wanted to do like a we'll trade chocolates for a puck or something like that to him. And they were so disappointed because he was scratched in the first game, I think, or whatever. But it sounds like they actually found a way to connect or get him a nice card or a note or sign or something they'd made or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, a few years ago. And I was joking with him, like, wow, you must have made a pretty strong impression. He's like, oh, no, I don't know about that. You know, it's not like he was a first-line player with Seattle or whatever. But he, you know, we've talked a lot about him coming over from Chicago and how much they loved him there. Back in Seattle, you know, a few years ago now, he's still a player that there are fans out there really, really excited and looking forward to him coming back, and they're making signs and everything for him.
That's so awesome.
To have a player like that as your 12th, 13th forward on this team, I think is a really, really good thing. And I'm excited to see what that looks like in the playoffs.
Yeah,
because I think he's a plug and play player, even in a game 7 of the playoffs.
So I have this question. Because he's played in three. So he grew up in Massachusetts and went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. So my question is, played in Chicago as well. Fried clams, deep dish pizza, or Texas barbecue?
Hmm. I don't know the answer to that.
I know. That's why I got to talk to him. Okay. I have to ask him that question. So. So I do have a Blackwell bias for sure. I just love his hustle, and I love his hustle on the fourth line. So Robert, what can we promote for you? What do you have coming up? When will we see your next article? You have an article up right now talking about tonight's game on starsthoughts.com. What else do you have?
Yeah, I'll keep posting stuff up there. For the time being, actually, my plan until I'm back up on my feet is just to have everything up there for anyone for at least the next couple of days, just because it's going to be more a little bit analysis based on stuff from earlier this year, as opposed to boots on the ground reporting for the next couple of days. I'll have a piece in D Magazine next week. Keep checking it out. The Stars play pretty much their last back-to-back of the season, unless something goes really wrong in the playoffs, but their last back-to-back of the season this weekend on Saturday and Sunday against Pittsburgh, Minnesota. So I'll be covering all those games and having time at home. So starting to feel antsy and a little bit more up for writing. So I think there's going to be a lot to check out the next week.
Well, please send him well wishes at Robert Tiffin. Thank you, sir. We went long today, but hopefully you understand that's a compliment to you for all the tweets. So it's always great to have you on the show, sir.
Always enjoy it, Gavin. Thanks.
Absolutely. It's a good time to be a Stars fan. And you know what? We'll be back with you with another episode soon. We got games this weekend. It's going to be a busy week for the Dallas Stars, and that means it's going to be a busy week for Spits and Suds. If you want to go back because it's evergreen, just a quick reminder, the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and we posted it as a Spits and Suds episode, had Ryan Callahan on, the 13-year NHL vet, now lead analyst for ESPN. So Ryan Callahan joined the boys today, and we posted that on Spits and Suds. For Robert Tiffin, I'm Gavin Spittle. Thank you so much for listening and supporting Spits and Suds. Until next time, have a great day, everyone.